Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We are back. Yes, we finally got here. It is episode one of season two. And if I'm honest, I probably couldn't think of a more perfect guest to kick this season off with. You know her as the ultimate happy mummy, queen of the jungle, best-selling author, podcaster, and all-around superwoman. Yes, it is Giovanna Fletcher. Giovanna joined me to chat about mum life, wife life, and well, just life in general. It's a chat that fills me with so much joy, and I hope it will do the same for you. So without lesser ado, here it is. Postcards from
the Edge. Okay, well, I am very, very excited to be introducing the amazing Giovanna Fletcher, who rocks my world on all levels as a mommy, a wife, and just a working person. Who really inspires me. So I'm really chuffed to be doing this interview with you. I feel like there's so many things I want to ask you, so many similarities and so many like moments where I'm like, what would G say? What would G do with me? G would help me with this. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on this podcast with us.
No, at all. It's lovely. Thank you so much. As you know, I'm locked away in my cupboard. I'm away from the kids for a while. This is a real treat.
I know, right? I do think that like if we could just join cupboard forces, it could be like a wild night out for us. Just like, do you know what I mean? Just some good reading because you've got all the books there, I see.
Yeah, exactly.
I could bring the cocktails.
Amazing. We could,
and if we got like really kind of like nervous, we could just play the sound of screaming children somewhere like on a on a device, just so we were like reassured that we were doing like the right, we weren't missing anything.
Yeah, that we weren't too relaxed.
That we weren't too relaxed. Yeah. You know what I mean? If there could be like some mini crisis, we could just simulate mini crises. Do you know what I mean? Within that could be part of the night out is we just like something breaks or like a kid steals a toy from another kid and there's a meltdown. Like we could just like role play. We could
be the kids.
We could be the kids. Yes.
Absolutely.
That's it. And then our husbands could be like somewhere, I don't know, playing dress up in the playroom and like be totally relaxed and oblivious to all of the trauma happening.
We could That sounds right, just about right, Ida. I think that sounds great.
I feel like I want to ask you about Tom because like there's got to be Tom and Rob similarities for sure happening in your household. But like,
absolutely.
I was, you know, because this podcast this year is all about what brings you to your edge. And I was kind of laughing because we had this birthday party last night and then Rob, who's on this kind of like bizarro time zone where he like sleeps till, I don't know, sundown and then is up all night long, decided that it would be really fun to just like come in and out of the bedroom all night last night and tell me about how he couldn't sleep and then go on his computer and then like come back in and grab a snack and come back in. And I literally was up with him the whole night. And I was like, even the kids don't do this to me. And I was like, we're on holiday right now. I don't have a spare bedroom. So there was like nowhere for me to escape. And like all the kids were sleeping. And then I was like, I'm going to wake them up if I come in their room. I actually debated just sleeping on the floor in the living room.
No.
Yeah. And I was like, Robbie fucking Williams, you have brought me to my edge this morning. I am talking with G and I have not slept all night. He's now upstairs. I don't even know what he's doing. He's probably playing video games. But anyway, I was like, What does Tom do to bring you to the edge? Has he brought you to the edge?
It is that sleep thing for me. You know, I could say the whole wet towels and all that sort of thing, but actually it's the sleep thing. So I do think creative people, they you know, go to bed at different hours. And he has this thing where when he comes up, you know, he's mostly quiet, I would say. He's not doing a Rob. However, okay. It's the bathroom door that does it to me. It's
creaking,
so annoying.
The opening, the slamming.
But how can you not open that quietly? It's like a massive, like... And I'm just like, I am now awake, so awake. And I was so asleep 2 seconds ago.
Right.
So that is the thing that brings me to my edge. Because then it might take me another half hour to go back to bed.
Exactly. And then they, when they do fall asleep, just are out. Like, I don't know about Tom, but like when he's out, he's out. And I'm
What's
like,
Rob like with the kids when they wake up? Does he even,
forget
arouse
it.
Him?
Forget it. No, like a sleeping fucking bear. Like honestly... The Gruffalo could walk in and like Rob would just be there with his little acorn in the bed and would not even notice. Like there's like earthquakes in LA, like nothing wakes the man. Like, and his thing too is he goes, well, I need at least 8 to 10 hours, babe. And I'm like, well, you know, that would be lovely.
So do I.
So do I. I don't get it, but yeah, I need that too. I'm working on 4, but okay. So he once the bear, you know, once the bear falls asleep in the woods, that's it. That's it for like a good 10 hours. No one wakes him. We all kind of like tiptoe. We're all very quiet. I think I'm the partner. I bet you like this with Tom. I'm the partner. I would like him to be with me. So like the bathroom door is like quietly, like I don't put the lights on. Even if I'm packing or I'm like, I need something. I'm like, sod it. I'll have one blue sock, one black sock. I don't care. I won't wake Rob. Do you know what I mean? It's literally like completely like as if Santa Claus is like, you know, like in the room trying to not disturb the children. And like Rob is like, his is like, I don't know. He's at like Pasha nightclub, fisting his hand in the air, whatever he's doing. I'm like, is this just the difference between men and women? Is this rock star husbands versus just normal humans? Like, what is this? I don't know.
If I think back to my parents, they'd both go up to bed at the same time. Like at 10:30, they used to. Yeah, they're not together. But as a kid, I remember they had a bedtime and they would go upstairs together. Now, we don't go to bed at the same time.
No,
ever.
Never. I don't actually remember the last time I went to bed with Rob at the same time.
It's crazy, isn't it? Early days, when it was romantic.
When it was
just for the romance, just because they knew they were going to get some.
Yeah, it was a website.
Now, not when, so much. They won't
when
come up.
When there was romance, when that happened, there would be a communal sleeping point just out of physical need. But now that that's completely dead, and been obliterated by 4 kids, now there's really no need to go to bed at the same time. Now it's more kind of like, what is it? Like we share, it's just a joint workspace now. You know, like I might as well make the bed like a ping pong table and we could just play every now and then. Do you know what I mean? And then just like scurry off into other corners to sleep. I think that's what it is. It's a wee workspace.
It totally is. I love that. I absolutely love that description.
I'm like, you know, I don't know. But then this is the conversation I have with my girlfriends. And I don't know if you have ever thought of this. And I'm not there yet, but my girlfriends and I, you know, because like Rob snores, which by the way, did not happen in the early days.
But you not just give him like Tom snores and I give him a firm shake of the shoulder, rolling him over.
Yeah. I'll sometimes kind of thump him with my leg. I'll shove. Sometimes it works, but then he goes right back to doing it. And I kind of, and I've had this thing because it really, the sleep does bring me to the edge. It
absolutely does.
Because there's so little of it available.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got the kids in the morning and you know that like once you wake up, that's it till the next time you get in that bed. And so I've like gone to this thing and I have some girlfriends who do this and some who don't. They're like, just sleep in a different bedroom. But then I think, God, then we're officially just roommates. We're just roommates. We might be brother and sister. Like, I don't know what's happening at that point. Like I'm just holding on to a thread with this like
but
joint
don't you
sleeping
think,
space.
Like we've gone through years of broken sleep with kids, like years and years and years. And even now, like the kids will climb into our beds in the night. And I don't mind that as long as they are stealth with their,
right.
With their coming in. If we don't even realize that they're there, I don't mind it.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I think that is why now, having broken sleep, now that they're not newborns, that is what really can, you know, cause your mind to go a bit cray cray. You know, I cannot function when I'm woken up in the night. Now I cannot be like, oh, it's fine, baby. It's all fine. That maternalness, like the maternal instinct of a newborn, that's gone now. Now I'm just like, mama who needs her sleep, because if you want the best of me tomorrow, I need to get my sleep in. And you are stealing it from me right now with your bloody door handle.
Right. And then like, and then how do you pivot when you're really tired? Okay. So like Tom's decided to go to the bathroom 12 times in the night. He's got water on his hands, so that door handle is like extra loud because he's like slipping now. And the kids have gone in and out. How do you then get up? Because now you've got a million different things you're doing work-wise and you've got these three boys. And how do you pivot in the morning when you've literally been brought to your knees with no sleep and everyone's disturbed? What do you do? How do you navigate?
The first thing for me is to get up. I think when you're trying to keep hold of that sleep, just, you know, five more minutes, it's actually more disruptive. So for
mentally.
Me, if just get up, you know, and I think that's, you know, we've had early risers as kids and they're much better now. Actually, they're jet lagged. This week, they've been getting up at 10:30. So we've been slowly trying to coach them the other side.
Coach them the other way.
Because otherwise they don't go to sleep until 7 o'clock at night. They've got a strict 7 o'clock bedtime. And I think tonight is the night.
You're going to cut it off and just.
Well, we've been trying to get them up. We've been taking them upstairs early still, but they've literally just been taking ages to go to sleep because of the jet lag, because of the heat. So this morning they were all up by 7:30. So that feels like a win. So tonight they should go to bed.
Well done. Time.
So my thing in the mornings is literally just to get up, not to hang on to wanting more sleep. Because once you're up and moving around, I do feel like it feels better. And that one thing that I've actually found recently that really helps me is that once the kids are on the school run, off to school, Tom usually gets up, they're out by 8 o'clock in the morning. I have a punch bag in my office.
Oh my God. That's fucking epic.
I have no idea what I'm doing, but I put on some great tunes and I just punched the crap out of my punching bag.
That is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that.
It makes you feel.
Tom's on the school run and you've got like fucking Rocky in your ears and you're just beating the shit out of this bag. That's brilliant.
It makes you feel so empowered. It gets it all out, gets you sweaty. And I discovered boxing years and years and years ago because I do all these big treks for a charity over here called Copperfield. And we'd walk 100K along coastal paths through the Sahara Desert. Years ago in the training for it, I properly went hard on my training and I really buggered up my knees. So I had to start doing training that was a little bit softer on the knees, and that's when I discovered boxing. And I just absolutely love it. I just feel like it's invigorating. You feel like such a badass, you know.
You feel like a badass bitch, right? You're like the beast in you.
Because you are acting in a way that you can never act as well in real life. Like you can't go around punching people. That's unacceptable. And there's good cause for that.
It'd definitely be a viral video, G, if you did that. Moment.
But it's just getting it out, and there's something so, you know, it's just a blooming bag, and it's not like, you know, people are like, oh, visualize a person. No, none of that.
Yeah.
It's just your body kind of going, oh, just getting it out.
I love that. Do you know, it's interesting that you said that, because one thing that I've been doing with, kind of like you, I think just from overuse, marathons, you know, every fucking fad, weird workout I've done, yoga, I have an injury right now that I've been dealing with for about 8 months. Which has been super frustrating. So all those things that I love to do, I can't do right now.
Yeah.
And that's been actually another thing I was going to ask you about. And it's great that, because I was saying, well, how does she do these 100-mile treks without injury? Because, you know, your body just at a certain point kind of gives up on you.
I broke my ankle last December.
Did you? No,
on
I didn't
stage,
know
yeah. So I was on stage in a play. Yeah. Mid-show.
No.
About 25 minutes from the end, 25 minutes. And I literally just stepped on stage and I think it's about half an hour before the end. And for some reason, all my weight was on one foot and it just rolled. just rolled and the massive like crunch. I knew instantly. My next line, thankfully, was, "Ow, fucking hell, I hate those fucking doors." That was my legit, my actual line.
By the way, dark comedy. That's amazing that was actually your line. Did you finish the, you didn't finish the show, did you?
I finished the show. I finished the show. Stephanie Beatrix was on stage with me at the time. And she was like, she knew something had happened. She was like, my face just like was so, you know, the pain was just there.
I bet you were like gray at that point.
I cannot believe you finished the show. Well, because you're in it. So you're just like, well, I've got no choice. So I'm just limping across the stage. At the curtain call, I came up for the curtain call, walked off and like I normally would, and then walked back on. I should have just
stop.
But the first thing is I had a message in my inbox that day saying, I came to see the show, just thought it was amazing and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, even, you know, it was amazing to see that the emotion was still with you, even in the curtain call. And I was like, no.
That was sheer pain. That was just blood-curdling pain. That was the emotion. I can't believe you finished that.
Oh my God. Finished it. Yeah, I just think the adrenaline was there. And
Did you then just collapse right afterwards?
Afterwards I took my boot off. It exploded like massively. I didn't do the show that night. Was off for 2.5 weeks in an air boot. But I managed to go back to the show in an air boot and finish the run. But even now, so I had it's been fine. Like I did a trek in Pembrokeshire up and down coastal paths.
You can do it.
I did the 5K. But then last week I was on a photo shoot on sand running across a beach.
Oh no.
And yeah, so it's anger with me again. It just feels really, really tight. So I'm going to go back to physio. But it is like that thing. I think these little things that happen, these little niggles, I think sometimes they're always going to be there. And it's about managing it and about doing what you can when you can and just easing off and finding other things to do when you can't.
It's hard though, isn't it? Don't you find, because like, just, you were talking about, you know, like beating up the punching bag, which I just, the visual, I actually think I might try that. Is these moments where, as you know, constantly kind of demanded women with whatever our obligations are in life, that you need these physical things to kind of just to output some of your energy. Cause there is so much demand on us. You know, there's like when you're multitasking, I mean, every person has, I mean, I think now we live in a world where there's just constant 24/7 demand on all of us, you know, and we're now balancing all of these plates, which I just feel like is almost unsustainable as a race. But anyway, we've got all these things. We've got this very fast paced world and these, you know, for me, physicality, like, you know, running, working out, yoga, whatever, it has always been kind of my part of my therapy, you know, that moment that you get, that's just you time, how you navigate, how you treat your parasympathetic nervous system and just like coat it with some love, you know, how in the face of everything, like, what did you do while you were injured and couldn't do any of those things to like, cause I think that's the worst. Like,
the first 10 days were really, really, really bad. And my mind was just so foggy. I was on really strong painkillers as well. I had friends getting in touch, you know, the director of the play that I was doing was so lovely. And he was like, so I've got this creative project that you can do to fill your mind. And I was like, oh, and when he first said it, I was like, absolutely. But my mind was fog. Like it was literally fog. So I filled it with watching Superstore. So basically I went on to Netflix. I watched the entire series of Superstore, watched Steph's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I just allowed myself to do that, which as a mom, you know,
you like, don't get to do.
You don't get that time at all. And my body, my mind, it wasn't letting me do anything other than that because I simply wasn't allowed to be on my foot at all during that time. Like I could walk around a bit on the air boot, but what happened originally was I went to physio and I must have a high pain threshold because the physio was literally moving around, doing all sorts of stuff. And he was like, great, I think we can get you walking on it next session. Then I got my MRI results back and he phoned me and he was like, put that boot on and do not take it off. He was like, that foot needs to be completely immobilized.
No.
Yeah.
He was just flopping that thing around and you weren't helping. You were like,
no. Okay. Well, and also it's that desire, isn't it? To kind of keep doing what you love. And
totally.
And with the play, it was that thing that's outside of motherhood. It was a bit where you find you again.
You time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's crazy to think that being on stage and, you know, having, you know, all these dramatic things happen is your you time, but it completely,
totally.
It was. So I think it was just that desire to kind of get back. But I mean, it's amazing what your mind does as well in that time. And so because I was in the boot then and told not to do too much, I just had to lean into it. That whole, you know, the old expression of leaning in, You had to surrender.
Yeah. It, which is so hard at first for us because we're not used to it because there's no surrender time.
And I couldn't even be downstairs in the living room with the kids because I was so worried about them jumping on my foot. So exactly. I was literally upstairs in the bedroom, Netflix on my little like laptop, and just, you know.
You're like, play again. By the way, I bet you, like, first of all, I bet you the kids, this is a funny thing. I think we put so much pressure on ourselves as moms to do everything, be there for everything, you know. Go to that, you know, sport thing with that kid, do that project with that kid, tuck in that one story with that one, make that. And then we feel so guilty when, especially when you've got multiple kids, you've got three kids, you know, it's like, there's never really, you never, at least I never feel like I'm spending enough time with any of them.
Yes.
When I'm with that one, I'm not with the other three, but then when I'm those two, I haven't done that. You know, there's this constant battle in your head. And it is interesting that like, when you have no choice but to actually self-care and hide yourself away, that the world does go on. They are fine. The husbands can. I mean, in my case, you know, like my mom will step in. But Rob obviously has to get his 12 hours of sleep or 16 hours of sleep. But the world does go on and they are okay.
And you know what? They were coming up. They were stealing my crutches. They loved that. They found that hysterical. They really enjoyed that. And I think I learned that with the treks as well, because, you know, you can feel guilty for not being there for a week, even though, you know, you're going away for an amazing purpose. It is that bit of you time. I feel like I find a bit of me every time I do a trek. And, you know, and you can feel guilty about not being there for the kids. But when I get back, they dive into my kit bag. They're taping out my sleeping bag, my head torch, my walking poles, the backpack. They're in the garden pretending that they are going off exploring as well.
Oh.
So it's amazing in that way that they're seeing me do that. So, you know, their mum do that and that they are feeling inspired by it as well, that they think it's something fun and that they want to try it. So I think we do beat ourselves up about stuff, but actually we're showing them that it's good to take that time for you as well. And that actually, although our world does evolve around them, the world doesn't evolve around them. And I think that is good for them to see as well.
I love that they get excited about that. Do you know, like, I think, you know, actually it was really interesting. I was looking through your Instagram and I was so blown away. I saw the performance your son did for Tom's birthday.
Yeah.
And by the way, Teddy was sat next to me when I was watching, because I think Teddy would really like to go on stage with Daddy. We haven't done it yet, but she was like, when she saw your son up there, she was like, oh, I want to do that. And I was just like, how excited, obviously you must have been to see him do that.
Yeah.
But this moment where, I don't know if this ever goes through your mind, is like, I know that my children will grow up and be in awe of Daddy. It's a natural thing. You know, it's like both of our husbands have these kind of very bizarro jobs that are a bit unusual. Mm-hmm. And the circumstances of it are unusual. I mean, not many parents, dads, whatever, get up on stage in front of thousands and thousands of people and, you know, play music. It's not a very, you know, common profession. And my kids, you know, they have spent their lives going to Daddy's gigs and watching him perform and albums, and they see people scream for him. And I have this real need for them, I think, because as a woman and, you know, being a parent, for them to see mommy doing some really cool stuff, you know, because it is important that they get that message too, that moms, women do really cool stuff too, you know,
and
explore that thought, you know. So I love the idea of, you know, like, I imagine when you do these things, there's a huge amount of pride when your kids get excited about your adventures and seeing you do these kind of extraordinary things and realizing,
absolutely,
and the books you write and your podcasts, like, you know, that must be a really cool feeling alongside your husband of doing those things and kind of providing that example for your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. What is interesting to me, though, is that so the kids know what Tom's job is. They completely understand it. If I ask them what I do, they scratch their heads a little bit. And then I'm like, But it's okay. But you think everything that Tom does is accessible to them. You know, right. The books that he writes, they can read those. They can't really read mine. You know, being on stage, they can download his music. They don't want to listen to me talking to other mums about old dads, about parenthood, you know.
Right, about,
however, right. I do a podcast for Disney. And off the back of that, I had to go to on a cruise lately. And I managed to take the whole family to Disney World. So they love mummy's job then.
Oh, by the way, I saw those pictures of Disney and I was like, I need to do that with my kids.
Have you not done it yet?
I've been to Disneyland. I've been to Disneyland with my kids. Again, one of those ones where I had like a back injury, but I was like, I promised I'd take them, you know, and I'm like carrying
I'll
my
take
kid.
You. I'll carry you.
Exactly. With like tears down my eyes doing it, you know, but I haven't done like the Disney.
The holiday. Walt Disney World. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like where you're like sleeping with Mickey and like eating goofy pancakes. Like, do you know what I mean? Like the full parent child immersion. You know what?
It's incredible. And you know, I did it. So I always wanted to do it as a kid. And my parents never took us because my dad's Italian. So we would always go and see the family in Italy. And then as we got older, my parents separated. So it was never really on the cards. But Tom's family used to save up for like every 2 years, they'd go on this trip. They'd never be able to stay anywhere in a Disney resort. They'd stay on International Drive in a really horrible hotel, dip into Disney for a day. So now it's a really emotional big thing for us to go to Disney and to take
and be able to
in-laws.
Do that. The real Disney experience.
The real Disney experience. And it's incredible seeing it through your children's eyes. It's so magical. You've got to get it in the diary because it is. It's just one of those things where you're just, and there's a slower pace. And yeah, you do. You do.
I do.
How old are the kids now?
Well, funny enough, I think we have very similar because my Coco is an August baby of 2018. So she's turning 4 next month too.
Oh, yeah. Same
so
as Max.
So we got to get Max and Coco together.
Yeah.
And then let's see. Okay. So Bo is two years old. Coco is almost 4. Charlie is turning 8 in October and Teddy's turning 10 in September.
Okay, so we've got 8, 6, and 3. Yeah.
Okay, so you've got the same. Yeah. But I keep doing that thing, I think, because there was a gap in between, I call them Team A and Team B. I'm always like struggling with the like, well, Team A could do this, but Team B is a little bit small. You know what I mean? Like, you know, then I can't, like, I'll feel really guilty taking just the two older ones to Disney. So
well,
like,
we've just had it where literally, so Max, he is slightly taller for his age, but we were able to go on the majority of rides together.
You were. Okay.
Yeah. Which okay. was incredible.
And he didn't get too tired. He was like, okay. Cause we're still like, Coco doesn't nap, but she's, you know.
I mean, I hire a double buggy as soon as I land there.
Oh, you do.
Like,
it. Oh,
I rent a double buggy, even for the 6-year-old. I'm just like, you've got a place to I'm sit not, as we're yeah, walking around, yeah. you know, and also because we never got to the fireworks this time. But usually if they're walking around, it's a lot for them to expect
yeah,
to see the
little
fireworks
legs.
As well. Yeah.
I know, because it's late at night. Mm-hmm. Do you know when I went there with the back, I was like, that's it. I'll stay for the fireworks. And I stayed for the fireworks. But I guess there was like fog that night. And at the last minute, they had to cancel it. And I was like, no. And then the kids were crying. And then it was like, obviously way past their bedtime. And then we had this like 2-hour drive back to the house. They were like screaming and crying in the car. And I was like, why do I do this? Why do I do this? You know, you're like, but I mean,
because you want to give them those experiences. That's why. That's motherhood, isn't it? We kind of bend ourselves backwards trying to get all these things in, and you know. But it's always, I think, like a detriment to yourself,
to your mental sanity. Well, it's to it does take you to your edge. Like I know, I keep going back to this concept, but like you know, like parenthood. You know, we were talking about work, and work is the me time, which is amazing. Like I feel this exact same way. I shot this thing a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, oh. The me is here. The me is enjoying this. Like, you know, it was like what used to be work is now the me time, which feels like such a gift.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And, you know, like, you know, parenthood is a tricky thing. I don't think anyone can prepare you for these. There's a constant edge that you're battling against because there's a certain level of patience. And like we're talking about fatigue and, you know, multiple humans needing you at the same time and maybe not necessarily being rational humans yet, understanding the why, the how, and, you know, still developing their own empathy. Do you know what I mean? And it can, take you to the edge. And I imagine even at Disney, there were a few edges you had to confront with three kids going through the park. You know, it's like, how do you, besides beating up your punching bag, how do you navigate an edge in your world? Like, where do you find your edges coming across, and how do you kind of come off of them?
So I guess one big edge for me is the morning routine, getting out of the house in the morning for school and stuff. You know, I think, like you say, kids can be so unpredictable. It can be a tantrum over getting a sock on, not wanting to brush your teeth, and it can take so long. So one thing that I do every night, which is a way of combating that, I don't send the kids to bed in their school uniforms, but I do have everything laid out. I have everything organized. I have bags by the door. I have the water bottles ready to be filled. I have the Tupperware ready for their snacks. As much organization as I can possibly do, so that in the morning, the focus is on them, and just kind of like easing them in, kind of, that's fine, let's do this now, let's make this really nice. Because the moment there's that forward energy, that's kind of like, let's go, it all goes tits up. My six-year-old cannot handle that, you know, quick maneuver. He needs to be eased, and the moment there is that quick maneuver, he's flying off the handle, and therefore you're trying to coax him into the car or into school. And it is for me, as boring as it sounds, organization helps me to step away from the edge and to feel like I've got a sense of
control
over the situation, which we know with kids, you know, you can control.
You have none.
You can prepare as much as you like, and it can all go tits up. But at least, if I am prepared, if I am,
you're organized, eliminating. You're eliminating.
Yes.
Some of what could cause an epic meltdown. Like I get it. Like Rob was laughing at me because I think we're traveling around so much. I kind of feel like we're kind of like in a circus. We're just constantly moving from here.
Your time zones must be all over the shop. Aren't you in Australia and bits like that as well?
Yeah, Rob was in Australia. I think he was in Australia. He was in one week, like 2 weeks ago, he was in London, Australia, and Dubai twice.
Wow.
It was like, you know, crazy traveling. And he was in Australia before that, and we were in LA, and we've been in Switzerland, and we're constantly, and this summer we're kind of moving around, and like with four kids, it just gets, you know, with each child, it gets a little more dynamic, these moves.
But with that as well, don't you think that before kids, you'd be like, I'll travel with you, this is great, this is great fun. Now there's kids, you're just,
it's
like,
fucking,
yeah, go
terrible.
On,
well, like, when I, totally. There was like a good 3 months where I was like, I'll see you later. We saw him for 2 weeks, where like normal Ida back in the day, you know, went with him everywhere. And I would say with the first two, I went to every show on tour. I was pregnant with Charlie and I had Teddy, and I was going to every single show. And it was like, we were flying at 1 a.m. with Teddy and like getting in at 3, and like the routine was shot. It was horrible. And then I think after the second one, I tried a bit and it was so impossible. Now with 3 and 4, I've just gone, this is a terrible idea. Like, I love you. We'll Skype, we'll FaceTime. I will see you at some point in the year. We'll figure this out. It's like, it's absolutely impossible. But like this summer we're traveling and I feel like we're on tour, even though we're not. And I have decided that where I think I've obsessively compulsed is in the packing cubes. I've gotten.
Yes, really, I love a packing cube.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So good. Honestly, the best thing ever invented.
Right?
Yes.
Like when you were talking about the organization just now, it was like, I actually don't think I could be a proper partner to Rob or even see him at all this summer if I didn't have a packing cube, because I have put out all of my like panic aggression into like micro cubing our lives. And it is amazing. Like there's what we could do. Instead of the like flat pack, we just create the mom cube and we zip ourselves, and it's got a breathable front. It's got ventilation right there. We curl into the fetal position and place ourselves in a large packing cube, and then somehow wriggle ourselves under the bed where no one can find us.
And we can have a straw that just allows us to have a cocktail every now and then.
Yeah. Like a little rosé straw.
There we go.
Do you know what I mean? Like one of those is, and then also we could be wearing a shiwi, do you know? So if we have to go to the bathroom, we don't have to leave the cube. You know, it's like, it's all interconnected. As long as the straw is not connected to where the shiwi is connected. Do you know what I mean?
They were okay. I think this is something. This is really like, something. Yeah.
We're on the precipice of something cool here.
And no
right?
one else cares about the packing cubes because on reflection at the cardboard box, the kids are likely to find the cardboard box and go, I want in. However, right. a packing cube, no one cares.
It's the least sexy thing in the house. Like Rob is like, I don't want my shit in cubes. I'm like, you don't understand. Like he doesn't get the cube. He has no respect for the cube. The kids don't care. But I am like, I've got initials on them. I know whose cube is which.
Really?
I went in hard. I've got initials, man. Because like, you're just flipping through those bags. You're changing from one bag to the next. I see.
Yes.
It's my one point of confidence in this absolute chaos is that I've got the packing cube labeled.
So have you had it properly labeled or are you just yes. sticking in stickers on there?
No,
amazing.
No. I fucking label them like proper. Like there's no, this thing is not falling off. They are labeled with stitching. Like there is no.
Wow.
And then I photograph, have photo references. Like I'm going in. That's when you were saying about the morning routine, I was like, we're singing from the same page here. Like the organization is all that keeps it afloat, I think.
So I use packing cubes when I go trekking because it's all got to go in the one bag. Yeah. So I have all my trousers in one, all my tops in the other, all my underwear, all my toiletry stuff. And that literally the night before, knowing I can just get each pack out, going trousers, top, that.
Isn't
and
it
just
so have good?
Everything organized. Yes. It's so good. But I've never thought about using them for the family. I'm yes. literally going to hop online after
this.
Oh,
get them.
Get loads.
Because there's like, I don't even know, like a 2 month delay. I ordered these things like a year ago and I got them. And I'm pretty chuffed with myself. It feels really good. Like,
but maybe
I'll
have to sacrifice the labels for now and just put their school ones on.
Do you know what you can do instead of the labels? This is the other trick. It's just different colors. So each boy has a different color.
Yes.
Boom.
I love this. Because Tom always laughs at me because whenever we go somewhere, I unpack as soon as we arrive. I don't care if we're there for 3 nights or 2 weeks.
Me too. Yeah,
it makes sense.
I need to know where everything is. I can't just be rummaging. But when you have the cube,
yeah,
especially if you have like limited space too, and you can't actually unpack everything, you're like, okay, underwear, check. Socks, check. I'm going to grab the shirts there. And you're like, you can just execute really quickly. And you're not like rummaging through things.
Yes.
Or like, if it's dark, you can't find it. Like I'm telling you, when you do it for the kids, it's absolutely incredible. And then when you want to lay out stuff, for the like next day, you're like, okay, well, here's the boys' underwear. Here's the socks. Here's the shirt. Here's the pant. Done. Go. And you just do it for all three boys. It's like 5 minutes. Oh no, you've got to do the cube for the kids. I'm telling you.
I've got to do it. I know.
When you open that suitcase and you see those color-coded cubes up in there.
Also, it helps with packing. You can get more in with the
You get
cube.
More in. You get so much more in. You roll it up. You do the little Marie Kondo kind of situations and you stack it and it's amazing. And then you don't have to like sit on the suitcase. There's not like a t-shirt that's catching in the zipper. Do you know what I mean? You like got the toiletries. Like it is a game changer. You've got to do that with the kids.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Literally, I'm writing it down right now. And as soon as this is over, I'm going on. That's the rest of my day planned.
Oh, it's so satisfying. It's like a momgasm. The minute you get those cubes in, honestly, like that is sexier to me than Rob and his tiger pants. Like just that that level of organization.
But the only thing though, that does just fall usually on us to do all that packing thing, you know. And I think Tom's completely oblivious. For years, I would travel. I would share a suitcase with the kids. So Tom would have his own suitcase.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. Yeah, oh yeah. I think we're married to the same person, by the way.
But I think it's just completely oblivious. Like, he goes up and back to his suitcase and thinks, oh, finally done it. Whereas I'm like, I'm packing for all of us. I'm packing for me. Only this year have I allowed myself to have my own suitcase when we go away. And I mean, it was something that I imposed on myself.
I can't believe you did that to yourself, though. I love that he got the suitcase and you did not. You were like, I'll just be with the kids. But like, by the way, I think, well, first of all, Rob doesn't even pack his own suitcase. We're not even yet. That's like, that would be like graduation for us. I'd be like, the other day he was leaving. Literally, he had to go away for one night and he was sleeping. It was like, he had to leave by 1:30. So I just was like, oh, bless him. He's tired. I'll pack his suitcase for him. So I packed his suitcase for him to travel off. And like, so he could get that, you know, that 16th hour of sleep in. Though I was on like, and I packed his suitcase and off he went. And he just like rolled out of bed and think,
thankful though? Because I feel like so much of that goes over their head.
It went over his head. Do you have to do the thing? I don't know if you have to do this with Tom, but I'll be like, I'm so sad. I'll be like, did you like your suitcase pack? Did you enjoy the way I packed it? Like almost begging for the praise. Like, will you please acknowledge that I've done this? Like, do you have to do that with Tom? Do you have to kind of like goad him into the like validation on that one?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing I have realized lately when we're going out or doing anything, I mean, it's very rare, but rather than, he's always like, do I look okay? And I'm like, I want you to tell me that I look good. I don't want me to be having to tell you that you look good. Of course you look good. Me, go back
to me.
Me.
Oh my God, that's so. I mean, Rob's the same way, babe. How do I look? How do I look? How does this look, babe? Do I look good? Yeah. How's my? He'll lift up the shirt. How's my stomach? Does that look good? He'll like suck it in. Do I still look good? I'm like, yeah, you look great. You look amazing.
I've started doing that stereotypical thing though that you see memes of guys doing where they say, yeah, you look fine without even looking. I caught myself doing it yesterday. Yeah, you look fine. I hadn't even looked.
That's amazing.
I was just a bit like, come on, let's get out.
Has he noticed the kind of like when you're not looking and you say, yeah, you look amazing. Has he noticed, or is he just so into himself in that moment that he hasn't even like, he's not even.
Oh, I think he definitely noticed yesterday.
Because
I went back at him and said it again. I've just said it and I haven't looked, but
Told him you had a look.
Oh, you told him around. You know, it's just that it's the whole faff. Like even that, like you must have the same. Like I can get up and get out really quickly. Tom's the faffer. He'll take ages getting ready. And I'm just like, it doesn't matter.
Come on.
I've left the house with leaky boobs and stains all down me. Like it does not matter.
Oh yeah. No. Rob's thing is like in the morning, like I have to, like you, it's like, I mean, I'll do that thing where I press the snooze button, which now I think after we've been talking, I'm not going to do because that's just torture. But like I will, this is the funny thing. It's like, I will get ready in 5 minutes. Rob, first of all, when he gets up, he needs like a good hour to decompress. Like you can't talk to him. Like he needs to like go on his computer. He needs
so after 16
coffee.
Hours.
Yeah, yeah. There's like
an extra hour.
He's basically doing like a long haul flight every night. But but my thing is like what he gets mad at, what drives him crazy is we're always like 5 minutes late, like leaving the house, and he's quite on time. And I will give him that. Like it drives him nuts that I'm like 5 minutes behind. But what he will do, what he doesn't understand, is that like I will have just been getting all four kids dressed and doing this and doing that, and they'll be like a house problem navigate. And I only get dressed in 5 minutes. Like I don't take a long time. I'm late because I'm literally handling everything else. And he'll just like put on his clothes and he'll be like, babe, come on, we're late, babe. And I'm like, literally, like there's a toy still in my hair. And like, like some sort of Sharpie mark on my face, and I've barely put on underwear, and I'm like running out of the house. And I'm like, it's not that I'm like languishing in getting dressed here. I haven't, there's no contouring that's happened on my face. I just happen to be taking care of our children, which is why we're late. Like he just like, Rob is just in like, I get dressed in Rob land. And then like, I'm ready. So why aren't we leaving? Like that's Rob Pro. But I think we do enable it. I do let it happen. Like if you like, do you ever say, Tom, you just do it. You just do all the kids right now. I'm going to take care of me.
I do. Well, sometimes I will throw the toys down. I'll put their toys, I'll put their clothes downstairs and say, right, I'm going to nip into the shower if you can do this. So I guess that is a sort of a shared thing. But one thing that Tom does do that really does irritate me actually is he'll say to the boys, okay, boys, get in the car now. We're ready to go. And the boys will get in the car. I'll get in the car. He's not ready. He's not coming.
Stop it.
Stop it.
No.
What are you doing? Like, let's not leave. I know it's because it's easier if they're out of the house, they're not fighting in the house, he can then just chill out. But I'm like, they don't need to be in the car for 5 minutes before we're then going to do an hour's journey somewhere. They don't need that extra time in the car.
They do not need that.
Because they've taken the fighting from in the house to in the car, which is a much more confined space. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a compressed small space. That's where more fights occur. That's where like kicking happens.
Yeah, I mean, we've put one in the back now. So we've got a Volvo. So there's three seats in the middle and then two at the back. Buzz has been relegated to the back just that they've all got a bit more space.
Oh, bless him. I know that routine.
He loves it back there.
He's like in his own penthouse. He's like, no one bothers me. I know it's smaller, but honestly, this is the desirable spot, guys. You don't know what you're missing. Billy No Mates in the back is like loving life. He's like, yeah, this is good. Life is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like how do you do car journeys? Because I've noticed since I've had the fourth child, I have reduced my car journeys because I get overwhelmed at having everyone in the car. How do you navigate long car rides?
So in the same way that we do planes, our kids used to not think before lockdown and having to use them for school. Our kids never used to think that their iPads worked unless we were traveling.
That's hysterical. They just like magically work when you travel?
Exactly.
They believed that.
Yeah. And we did it for a long time where there was one iPad on the back of the seat where they were all watching Bluey, which did mean that we had to sacrifice, you know, our conversations or, listening to our own music.
Adult stimulation. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We just have Bluey on repeat, which is the best TV series of all time. But so they do that. Whereas now they play with their devices. They have books. But I did do a trip the other day. Actually, the day that it was Tom's birthday, we were driving to his gig. It was a 2-hour journey. And I didn't even think about bringing anything for them in the car. So we had 2 hours. I cannot tell you the amount of times that I had to tell them to stop. Put it quite bluntly, you know, if mummy's looking at you, she's not looking at the road. That's how accidents happen. When accidents happen, people can die. So I thought that just the stark reality of that would bring them back to earth. No, it had to be said a few times.
No, because that's rational. Yeah.
And you see in the mirror like an arm being thrown, or it's something being whispered to wind the other one up so an arm's thrown. So I did have to pull over and get some magazines in the end just to kind of let's work. So I actually, it was going well for a while because I was going through different songs, different musicians. Like we were listening because the boys love like AC/DC, Green Day. So we were listening to those, and I was going to other bands that I thought, oh, you might like this, you might like that. And it was going really, really well.
And then it inevitably turns the other direction.
But that's motherhood as well, isn't it? You've got to take those little moments when they come. Like, look at us appreciating good music together.
Right, then
it all just going tits up.
By the way, they do appreciate really good music. Like, that's amazing. That's a good selection right there.
Yeah. They went to the, so Buzz and Buddy went to the Hella Mega Tour, which was Green Day, Fall Out Boy and Weezer. And they, honestly, my 8-year-old just rocks out the entire time. Like, they just completely and utterly love it. They play, they've got their drums, they've got the guitar. So Buzz will listen to a song and then go off and work out how to play it. which is incredible. And that's the whole idolizing his dad thing. You know, he I just think he looks at Tom in such awe and is just like, yeah, that's amazing. That's what I would do. You know, whether he does or not, it's just a lovely thing for him to be able to, you know, hone this talent and enjoy music.
Share in that way. Like, I think, you know, like I do see, as I said, like Teddy's the same. She kind of looks at daddy with just like those heart emojis in the eyes.
Yeah.
And like, she's constantly on the piano making up songs, but like beautiful songs, like achingly beautiful ballads. And I'm like, whoa. And by the way, she might not do that. In fact, I'd probably prefer that she didn't do that. You know what I mean? I'm definitely not pushing that, but it's just a really nice thing that she gets to share with daddy, with all of us, really.
And also just like discovering and develop that thing that they have for them. Like Teddy's sitting down at the piano and playing. So many people use that as their own sort of switch off and therapy. And that's an amazing thing. That's what I always say to the boys. You don't have to be good at everything that you do and all the things that you do. You don't have to want to do those for your work. Like you can just have those for you and enjoy doing them. It doesn't mean that you have to then be the best at it or, you know, turn it into this massive thing. It can be just that special thing that's yours.
Yeah. Do you feel, because I don't get to ask this question often, or I don't think I've ever asked it. Do you feel sometimes, because when I see Teddy performing and it's like this amazing thing, I do always wonder too, being the daughter, the child of someone who's, you know, very famous in music, like the pressure of having to then be that when they do that. Like I never want Teddy to think, or any of my children to think, that if they do music, that they have to be a superstar in order to be successful about it. And you know, and I saw your son up there on stage in front of thousands and thousands of people. It's such a surreal experience. It's like,
well, and what happened with that though? So it was two of them, because Buddy was on the drums.
Buddy was on the drums too. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
But what happened is because they play at home and you know, they jam together. Tom goes and jams them and stuff. And we were at the show, so it was a McFly gig. And at soundcheck, our kids had gone up and just played with the drums or played with the music, played with guitars and stuff. And then another band, the Hoosiers, were on first. And then while they were on, the six-year-old Buddy said to Tom, "So when are we playing?" And Tom was like, "Oh, no, you're not playing tonight." He was like, "What? We're going to play a song." And Tom was like, you can't. And then Buddy got really upset. So Tom was like, how do I navigate this? So anyway, every show, what happens after the support act go up or the first band go up, their techs will go up and just make sure that all the instruments are working. They'll bang all the drums and all the cymbals. So Tom was like, right, you can go and you can do the line checks. You can play the instruments on stage. And the next thing we know, the boys are like, okay, we're going to do this song. Buddy, you're going to do this. I'm going to do this. And they were literally just, it was 15 minutes before they were actually going to do it. They were just completely zoned into doing it. Buddy went and did his hair. Like, he's always loves it messy, but he properly like combed it down.
Rock-starred it.
Yeah.
Did the thing.
And they were just like, this is what we're doing. And they have never, honestly, outside of our house, they've never performed to anyone, you know, obviously like school plays and stuff, but nothing like that. So walking out and seeing them with such confidence, seeing the audience's reaction, who were so lovely, because, you know,
that was amazing.
They've known us for years and years and years. You know, they've been going for 20 years now. And seeing their warm reaction to them, it was so heartwarming. And, you know, you just,
I was like, I literally was like emotional watching it, like for you as a mom going, I was empathizing with the moment because I understand it. And it was just like, wow, I can't believe if that was my Teddy up there doing that, how I would feel. Like, I'd be like overwhelmed completely and utterly seeing her do that.
Yeah. How amazing to have those experiences. It doesn't mean that you have to go off and have, you know, a massive big music career, because, you know, who knows what they're going to do? Who knows what they're going to be? But I do think, it's that strange thing where they have this whole world that is a little bit more accessible to them than your average 8 or 6 year old, you know, or 10 year old in Teddy's case. And so for them to be able to dip into it, what a privilege, what an experience.
Totally. I love that they also took such ownership of it, that they really were like, no, right, this is happening. They like tunnel visioned between the two of them and went, we're freaking doing this. It's on.
How do you step in the way of that?
You can't. You know? Oh no, you did the right thing. You've got to let that moment flow. You've got to let them have that.
Yeah.
How did you navigate? Because I feel like, you know, with Rob, he's always on the road. He's always working. I imagine Tom's always on the road. He's always working. How did you guys navigate with the kids? You know, we're talking about these moments of shows, and for the first time ever now, I would say Rob has just started doing some shows again and will do some shows. But for, you know, pretty much 2 years, there was no music outside for us. There were no performances. That all of the regular routine was completely disrupted for us as a family. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for the world, for sure. But in particular, if you were in music, you know, the way in which you navigated the world was completely changed. How did the kids, you know, because I imagine the disruption was quite obvious. Daddy's at home now and daddy's normally gone. Like, how did you navigate that kind of dynamic?
I think we treated it as much as possible. I can remember having a family sit down. I can remember as a kid watching like Home and Away and Neighbours, and there was always a mum, I think she was called Pippa, who sat down for like family chats, you know, the big moments.
Right.
And I sat the family down and early on and was like, look, this is happening. It's all going to be a bit weird. We're going to have moments where we feel quite frustrated with each other, all of us. And we just have to know, we have to be aware that that's going to happen and work through it. And I think I was ready for it all to be absolutely awful. I mean, creatively for both of us, like book-wise for me, I had to just kind of, it wasn't going to get done. Like the podcast is different. The podcast, I could nip off for an hour and a half, 2 hours and have a good old chat. But book stuff, it's very hard to be, you know, immersed in your character, immersed in their world, and then have a child ask you a maths question. Or ask you for a snack, which would happen every single minute of the day. So that was really, really difficult. And I think Tom, in the same way, he had to take the foot off, you know, the accelerator a little bit, and just kind of ease into family life. And you know, we are very fortunate in a way that, you know, we had a roof over our heads, we had food on the table, we had a garden. You know, our garden at the time wasn't very big. But we would run around that thing and get our 5K in, you know, every other day.
Wow.
Honestly, well, we're making a track around that garden. I was talking about a podcast actually the other day, and I was like, I have literally had visions of where I was in the garden at different points during this podcast chat. So it was a time where I think for the kids, it was actually really comforting. I think they find it probably more difficult now that there's this disruption, because for such a long time, they had mummy and daddy there. We were there every day. You know, we were in the fortunate position where we could push work away or put it into evening. So once the kids, which is why we're always quite strict with bedtimes, because if they go to bed at 7, we will then work from as soon as they're asleep to like 10:30, 11:00. Or further in Tom's case, you know, depending on what like deadlines are and stuff. So trying to work it that way, or just talking to each other and kind of going, I'll take the morning, you know, but
right.
It's just hard. You've got to, I think for the kids, it was actually the sense of stability, you know, being able to like knowing that we were both there. You know, I look back at videos and stuff of that time, and there was actually so much laughter there. You know, there was so much playfulness. And, you know, we went to a funeral yesterday and, you know, seeing all the different pictures of this amazing woman who
I was Deborah James. My heart.
You know, but you look at the life that she lived and how much fun there was in it, how much dance, how much music. How much love. And you just like, you know, I don't think there's anything, death is the thing that really puts life into perspective, you know. So I know that me and Tom were both there yesterday kind of going, we really need to get this work life balance under control, because I think COVID made us realize what life's about. You know, every day you're there sat looking at the news going, this is awful. We're so lucky to be here, to be able to
be alive.
And I think, you know, Deborah James has done that again. You know, death's the inevitable, we all know it's coming. And I think so often we are people who live for the future. You know, we're doing this now, we're working our socks off now so that in the future we can have an amazing life, and we can go off traveling, we can go to Australia for the summer holidays, we can do this. We're actually, you need to have those things in place now. You need to have those boundaries, that, you know, balancing it right so that you're not just passing ships, so that your kids get to actually see you. So I think it's a complete juggling act. I think COVID in many ways, you know, did amplify that. But now that we're all catching up, you know, those 2 years of not doing shows, you know, of not having books out, whatever it was, all of a sudden, that's all coming
back. It feels quite almost like, I don't know if it's because of that pause in time where we kind of, exactly, we nestled in, we stopped in our tracks, the distractions melted away, and we grounded. I don't know if it's the sharp contrast of that or now this need to catch up, but it feels like this reemergence is even more chaotic and more full throttle. And just like you, my kids have struggled, I think, with the reemergence more than I think they enjoyed having us both home and enjoyed this, like, you know, where we're wearing our pajamas all day and we're watching movies and we're, you know, cooking things together and, you know, mommy and daddy are both there and we're present for everything as opposed to, you know, they have,
because also we're all freelance, you know, we're all freelance. So our schedules are all over the place. You know, so it's a difficult world, I think, for our kids to kind of feel that groundedness. So you have to put things in place so that they do feel, you know, that they
tethered,
they're solid. Yes,
exactly. Because exactly, like you and I are very similar, that we have completely kind of bohemian freelance lives, and it's always changing. And sometimes daddy and mommy are there all the time, every day, where other parents be working. And then sometimes we both have to be off working, you know, and we're sleeping away, you know, and it's very different from someone who has a 9-to-5 in a specific place where it just clocks in and you know what the schedule is. Yeah. But I definitely have found that, like everything now, because we're all catching up, we're doing all the things we didn't do for 2 years, that it's quite fast. Or maybe it's because we're out of the practice of doing it that it feels faster. But it did stop me in my tracks when I was listening to that clip of Deborah talking about playing life forward and how, you know, we're not living in the present. It's so true. We know it, and it's in the back of our heads always. But then when, just like you say, when you're presented with the concept of death, someone passes, you know, there's something that makes you realize, oh, wait, I've taken my eye off the ball. I do need to remind myself that today is the only day that is promised. We can't keep doing this. And actually, I'm glad you put that up on your, I'm glad you put that up online, because I did think, wow, I wasn't obviously at the funeral, but I just listening to her speak and obviously see her describe, well, I don't know if there's a tomorrow, and you know, and how important it is to be in the today. It is, it is an interesting one. I think COVID was definitely something that brought that concept home by force. But I wonder if, you know, if we could figure out a way to not do it by force, where it doesn't take death, or it doesn't take, you know, a national, international, global pandemic to ground us down, like someone flinging us onto the floor, like how we implement that. How do we do it?
Well, Emma Freud, so she was on the podcast years and years ago, I think around 2018, so the same time as Deborah. And I can remember her saying that her and Richard Curtis, her partner's Richard Curtis, have been together for decades. And still now, even though the kids are late teens, early 20s, she sits down every week with her diary and goes, that's too much. That's too much. Let's cross that out.
Really?
Let's cross that out. Yeah. And I think to have the balls to kind of go, this isn't my life. This is not balancing my life right now. And that's going to take me to the edge. So let's pull back. And people get that. I do think to a certain degree, people do understand when there's just too much on your plate, you know, and we are in a privileged position where we can kind of rearrange things for another day and
all of that jazz.
You know, and hopefully even with friendships and stuff, you know, if that meal, going into that meal, it's just one step too far. Like, you just need the night in. I think like friends and everything are just much more, you know, giving in that regard. I've got to say, actually, when it comes to a day where I know I've got something in the diary, if someone cancels now, I feel a sense of relief.
Oh, me too. I was just going to say, I feel relieved.
Yeah.
I think the only reason I make plans now is because I'm an inherent people pleaser. And I feel like I can't just keep saying no. So I say yes, but I see it every day. Like even today, I've got a lunch I've got to go to. Yeah. I would like to stay in. I don't want to go, but it's one of those things where they've asked and I finally said yes, you know, and you can't, you know, and it's a tricky one. The balls, I like when you said the balls to say no, it's like balls to have boundaries, and I'm not brilliant with them. And like, if they were to call me today and go, I can't, I've got a stomach bug, like I've got a fever, I don't know if it's, I'd be like, no, let's cancel. You know, I would be not that I don't want them to have COVID, but I would just be relieved for my social obligations to be canceled, because actually I would much rather every single day stay in. which is just like, you know, so un-rock and roll. But I really, you know, I would rather, I think I just, I fill my calendar up out of guilt and people pleasing. I'd hate
to say no. Because also when you know, when someone messages you and you're just like, oh, we've got to meet up. You know, if it just leaves as that, you're never actually going to meet up. So no. Then people go, great, this date. You're like, yes, yes, I'm free.
Totally. Right. And you have to find a day. You have to, because you can't go. And then sometimes you go, oh, I can't do Friday. Oh, well, what works for you next week? Yeah. You're like, I've got to give you a day, don't I? I do. You've left it like that. Because I can say no
because you don't love the people that you're arranging with. You love it. You love the idea of getting together and having good old times. It's all the stuff around it. It's because your time is so limited. It's because you're so depleted.
Totally. Yeah. I feel like sending a text going, like, again, I got one yesterday. I was like, oh, I can't till Monday. And she's like, oh, well, we leave then. I'm like, oh, you know, And just we're like, even says, well, why don't we just meet for a coffee? And you're looking at your schedule and you actually don't even have time to meet for a coffee because it's so blocked in. And I do feel like sometimes sending out a massive text going, just so you know, I love you all.
Yeah.
It's not a reflection of me not liking you that I don't see you, but it is, we are depleted. It's so hard. And that was what was kind of nice about COVID was that that all went away. But now it seems like it's like the complete overcorrection. And it's like, well, I haven't seen you for 2 years. Let's go meet for drinks. That,
yeah. But even then, like, I feel like I know we are all zoomed out now, but being able to be with all of my mates on a Saturday night, you know, regardless, you know, the kids would be in bed. I didn't need to worry about a babysitter. I didn't need to worry about coming back at a certain time. Like, I got to see my mates so much during COVID, thanks to technology. And now everyone's over it. So I'm a bit like, well, if you're over the tech, I can't. I've still got the kids.
Don't hate the tech, please. Please. You're like trying to set up like Friday night Zooms. Everyone's like, piss off. Like,
come on, I've got a really good quiz. I found it on the internet. We haven't done it yet.
We're all like, I'll see you at the pub. Get out of the house. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm with you, G. I'm happy to Zoom anytime. I'd like to wear elasticated waistbands on my clothing. Yep. I'd like to wear no bra and I'd like to just chill like that. Like that's, that to me is the win, like slippers. Do you know what I mean? Hair is messy, teeth, not necessarily brushed. Like let's just, let's go in. Let's not judge. Let's just chill like that. Cause it's tiring. Yeah. Right.
It is all of it. It's all just tiring. So I did love that for COVID, being able to see everyone, you know, under circumstances that were, you know, just a lot more easy,
a lot more accessible. There's no traffic. Yeah. There's no parking. There's no, you know, crowd.
All the other stuff that goes around it, you know?
Yeah. That adds to the kind of like, it's like we were talking about with the organization, like you in the morning, you eliminate all the variables so that if there is any chaos, you know, it's whatever is about to erupt, but you've navigated all the things. It's like with Zoom calls, you eliminate all the variables. You just get to be present in the talk. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like the minute you go out, it becomes, you know, you got a ticket, someone like cut you off, you know, it's like the car got dinged, there's mud, like someone, a bird just shat on you, like whatever, it's happening, like life happening.
And for us, we were chatting with a group of eight mates. So you take it in turns to talk. Like whenever you're out with a group of eight mates, you all, you know, you partner off. You know, we weren't making separate Zoom rooms. We were all just in one room taking it in turns to chat. And it was amazing. Like I got to know some of my like best friends' husbands more than I did ever before, you know, so for that, it was great.
Did Tom find it? Because I think Rob found it socially liberating because he's, I would say he's not antisocial, but he gets really overwhelmed in Tom, any kind of Zoom. So he was like, Rob loved that he really didn't have to see anyone like at all. Yeah. And now I think he's like, you know, I've made him go out to like a dinner twice. And he's like, whoa, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. Like, so
Tom has this thing where beforehand, so if I say, look, so-and-so is invited to us to this, do you want, like, shall we go? He's like, yeah, it'll be great. Day before, you can see the doubt creeping in. Who's going to be there? What time? You know, what is it? You know, and you're just like, why? You know, on the day, I've got a bit of a sore throat. You're just like, come on.
You don't. Come on, man. That's Rob. Classic Rob says yes. And then like the day before, well, you know, we've got that thing tomorrow. What thing? You know, the thing that I told you about, the thing. Oh, I don't know if I feel like going to that. Well, yeah, but you did say yes. They've organized it for you. yeah, but I just might not feel like going to it. It's literally, and then it's like 9 times out of 10, it's Rob canceling at the last minute, me yeah. making some excuse for him because I feel too embarrassed to say, oh, he's just not bothered. He's so totally overwhelmed right now. Do you know what I mean? And then I go by myself. I'm usually the only one like without the partner. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Rob is, you know, got a business.
I wonder if there's like that business school. I wonder if there's that extra layer though, where they know that if they go, they're expected to be Robbie Williams. They're expected to be Tom Fletcher. And actually they those personas. They are, you know, actually quite reserved characters in many ways. You know, they don't want to have to switch it on. They're not performing monkeys.
Well, that's exactly what Rob says. He goes, babe, when I walk into a room or a dinner, I have to be Robbie Williams. Yeah. You know, I can't just be me because keeping people, it's a big expectation to fill to be that guy, you know? And, yeah. and just like that. Yeah. Rob's quite like, he's not quiet. Cause he's, you know, when you get, he gets going, he's fucking chatty as all hell, but he's not, you know, he doesn't walk into every dinner with like, let me entertain you on and like pull his pants down or say, my name's Robbie fucking Williams. Like, you know, he'll just like to sit down and eat some food.
Yeah.
But I think people come ready to receive the guy on stage.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of expectation that's interesting. I imagine that Tom and Rob feel, cause like you and I get to walk into a dinner and no one's kind of expecting us to tap dance or, perform music miracles. And I think for them, I think they see the person on stage, the person in interviews or, you know, whoever they grew up with. And they think that person's going to sit down next to them and be that for a whole meal.
Yeah.
And
actually,
like Rob's quite, he's quite internal.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom's the same. Yeah, absolutely.
I think if I were to say Rob's edge would be more than anything, probably a social edge for him because he feels like he can't compete with that guy and be that guy. So he gets completely overwhelmed in scenarios like that, which is where COVID was great for him.
Yeah, I completely agree. Tom also hates saying goodbye, hates me saying goodbye to people. He loves a French exit. We call it a French exit. I've got no idea if it's a French exit. Where you literally just
he likes the dash.
He likes the dash. Where I'm like, no, we've got to say goodbye to that person, to say goodbye to that person. It's like, if you do, we're here for another hour. And I'm like, we won't be. Don't worry. And then an hour later, I'm
totally.
Bye.
But that's like me because I feel guilty just leaving. It's like the people, I've got to say goodbye. Oh, and if I don't say goodbye to them and I've said bye to them, then I've got to, Rob's just like sat there rolling his eyes going, can we just go?
And I know that he's right. Like if we were to just, leave, no one would know what time we left, everyone's a bit vague and in their conversations anyway. So no one would really be paying attention to when you go. But it's just that thing for you that you kind of feel like, no, but if I don't go, it'll be so rude. Yeah.
What is it about them where their boundaries are just different from ours? Like, I think, and by the way, I think like you said, they're right. I think that's a healthier boundary. It's like, that's not going to work for me. I will go now. Where I was like, oh, I know, but, and I don't know, is that like, even with parenthood, it sounds like Tom and Rob have stronger boundaries with what they need in a situation than what we need. Do you think as like a woman, we're just kind of like inherently taught to lose our boundaries in these scenarios? And so we've just kind of blurred all the lines.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think?
I think, if you look at your to-do list every day, your needs are always at the bottom. And I think that is just something that we inherit. You know, we look at our mums, they did the same for us. And I think that is that role. And I think even now that so many of us also have full-time jobs, we are still taking on the same amount. You know, we might pass some over, but the real responsibility, I believe, still lies on us. You know, it's everything done, I don't know. I find that hard to shift. I when Tom is, getting involved and doing stuff, is he doing it the way that I would do it?
Totally.
Because I would do it properly.
Wait, you mean is I would do it better?
I would do it the right way.
Because that's what's in my head. I'm like, but I would do this better. Like that's how, no, come on. Let me just do it. Like it is that.
But then that's the other stress, isn't it? So you can hand it over, but are they doing it the way that you would do it? You know, and if they're not doing it, you have to be able to let that go. Like when I do go away to the treks and stuff, I know that all the kids are going to go to school clothed. They're all going to have the right uniform on. They're all going to have their snacks and their waters and stuff. I know that that's going to happen. And Tom does it in a different way to me. And that's Okay. I just need to just go that. That's fine. Step away. Step
it's
away.
It's so hard though.
Yeah.
The micromanage. It's really hard to surrender.
Yeah.
It's like, and I know that, like, you know, we're talking about these edges. If I were to find that sweet spot where I can surrender some of that control and surrender some of those rules I have of what needs to happen, it would be actually a lot easier for me. But I think when you were saying, it's like you take it all on and you create this kind of, you almost make the mountain bigger for yourself because you do take everything on and then want it to be the best that it can be, which creates its own black hole of things you have to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like
And then chucking a little bit of resentment because you're the one that's doing it all. Why are you doing it ill? Yeah.
Totally. It's like there is some sort of like addiction to the resentment too. It's like, what would I actually do if Rob stepped up and did it all with me? Like and did it better. I'd probably fucking hate that. Do you know what I mean? I'd be like, go back to bed, Williams. Go.
You're like, not wanted here. I like to know when I resented you.
I liked it better when you were sleeping and I resented you. You're better when you do nothing. Leave me alone. I've got this. No, but it's true. I wonder. I hadn't thought about that. I love to moan about the fact that he doesn't do any of it. But shit, what if he did?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where would we be? We wouldn't even be in our packing cube.
We'd
have no excuse. We'd have no excuse. We'd just be flopping around a big bed or couch going, oh, we've got nothing to do.
Oh, I'm going to sleep for 16 hours.
Yeah. I'd find a way to resent the sleep. I would. I'd moan about that. That's so funny. Oh, I just, you know, I have to say, I've really loved every single minute of this chat, G.
So have I. Thank you so much.
You really, you know, you're light as a feather. You know, you have such a brilliant way of describing things and it's so accessible and friendly and loving. And I totally relate to you as a human being and a mommy and a wife and a you. And you rock. You rock, G.
Ditto. Same right back at you. Thank you so much.
I wish I was in the cupboard with you and we could beat the shit out of that boxing bag together. I'm going to come and do that.
One day, come and do that with me.
I'll do a boxing session in your cupboard.
Perfect.
The kids are really going to wonder what's happening in the cupboard, by the way. There's going to be all sorts of noises. It's like rock music and grunting. Be very confusing in your house. Postcards from the Edge.
If you enjoyed this episode, please, please subscribe. I mean, it's actually begging. Rate us, review us, all the 5 stars, all the bells and whistles, please, wherever you find your podcasts. Seriously, desperate for a good review. Also, if you want to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Ida Field Williams, so please let us know what you think of the podcast. And even who you might like to have on as a guest. You never know, we might actually be able to make it happen. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Postcards from the Edge is a Blueprint Pods production. Executive producer Sophie Palak and producer Warren Borg. Postcards from the Edge.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.